whispered in a weary face. A kiss is sweet and warm embrace. Another time, another place. Every hour, every day, learning more. The more I learn, the less I know about people. The less I know, the more I wanna look around. Digging deep for clues on higher ground. Almost impossible to listen to without getting into a kind of happy funk. UB40 and Higher Ground. What a best way to actually sort of say, Ian Lennox, it is Thursday, not Wednesday, Thursday. What happened yesterday? Were you just in the time zone?
I must have missed it.
Yeah, well, clearly. You know, this is amazing. Thankfully, with their fingers always on the pulse, we have Sally Monday and Amelia Chambers from the Lincolnshire Agricultural Society, the show team in many ways. So obviously two of the show team. I mean, there are others, of course. Yes. Jane Southall being one of the routine. Is Chloe still there with you?
Yes! Yes, of course.
Because she'd kind of gone underground for a little. I thought, you know, maybe it's...
She just went back to Leicester for Christmas. That was that or underground, whichever you want to call
same
it.
Thing. We'll just use the euphemism, she went to Leicester.
Yeah, right.
Say nothing else on that point. Ian, we've also got Jessica Ward, of course, in the studio, who is currently whereabouts in terms of your reading of Ian Lennox's novel?
I'm still at the same place as last time.
Yeah,
so I will finish the book at some stage.
Exactly. It's brilliant stuff there. But I know, Ian, you're desperately keen to find out, as a lad from Newcastle, what exciting things the Lincolnshire Agricultural Society is offering in this wonderful celebration of Breakfast Week. So it was good. And indeed, Comedy Carry Nights. And I've also been just catching some news that Jessica was hearing about sort of exciting new displays for the Lincolnshire Agricultural Show. Or was I just sort of...
Was I
a new website?
Yeah. Yeah, we're very excited about that. Goes live next week.
It's fantastic. So that's why I look a little bit stressed, because we are on deadline. But it is going to be absolutely amazing. Interactive maps, downloadable activity packs for children and other people, because we've really enjoyed doing the word searches and things. all those kinds of things. It's absolutely fantastic.
I've been looking at their brochure and it's amazing. They say it's got the similar kind of theme, so I'm excited for it.
You must be around for the Lincolnshire show this year.
Oh,
Jessica,
yes.
You might have to stay over a little bit because of the dates for the Lincolnshire show, of course, Amelia.
24th and 25th of June.
24th, 25th of
Wednesday,
June.
Wednesday,
Thursday. Thursday.
Exactly.
8 till 6.
Both days.
Not that it's ingrained in our minds at all.
It's a way forward. Ian, you can sense the excitement that's already beginning to build to fever pitch here in the wonderful village of Lincoln. Have you got any questions?
How big is the show? Is it agriculturally based?
Well, we have around 200 acres and it fills that. So we expect around 60,000 people over the 2 days. So it's one of the largest agricultural shows in the UK.
We have over 1,000 livestock and equine entries competing over the 2 days, 600 trade stands. So yeah, it's pretty big, but we strive to keep agriculture as our focus, really, at the heart of the show, because that's what it's all about.
Well, that was the original.
So we're very proud of our agricultural machinery lines and things like that. They're quite a spectacle.
Have you got a lot
showground.
Of companies who manufacture machinery?
Yeah, we have. We're incredibly lucky, and I'm incredibly grateful for the support, really, that our machinery dealers give us year on year. Because sadly. Yeah, absolutely. They come on as sponsors or exhibitors, and sadly, you know, quite a few of the sort of county shows are losing that agricultural focus. So it's very, very important to us.
Oh, right, they're going to sort of like more like entertainment centres.
Yeah, absolutely.
And
please don't mention the bouncy castle. It's too. We've already had Earth moving in the early part of the programme.
For us, Ian, it's striking.
I can't imagine you in a bouncy castle, Alex.
Really? Well, keep that fantasy to yourself, then. Okay.
But it's about striking the balance, really. We want to keep the agricultural focus, but we are very much a family day out as well. So it's just striking that balance to...
The trick of these things is you've got to move with the times,
absolutely.
But you've also got to retain the original flavour of the thing.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's what we try and do year on year.
And what is your involvement with the website? Have you actually helped create it?
We've completely redesigned it. So it was designed about...
Who's we?
Being the royal we being me.
You can tell he used to work for the Manchester Guardian. Right?
Yeah.
Straight in there. So
myself and Chloe, and then with a design team as well called Root Studios, who are based in Lincoln.
So you're the ideas people, and they put the thing into practice.
That's correct.
Design a computer game on that basis. I could think of a game, but I couldn't do the first line of a computer program to play it.
You could obviously put Ian in contact with these
guys, maybe I will. Yeah. Maybe if that's what you want to do. But no, the new website will launch next week, and it's much more interactive. It was only last year that we started doing e-ticketing, so people could buy tickets online and download them.
Yeah, I see. So that's the start of it, and then you sort of went on to the more sophisticated stuff.
So you have to evolve with the times, and that's what people expect these days. But it just things like... It's obviously a great family day out, so trying to make the website more appealing to families, but also to little show visitors who want to come and learn about farming and agriculture. So we've got downloadable activity packs, a treasure hunt for them to do on the day, lots of things like that, and just making it much more visually inspiring, really.
So it's not just really what you're going to get when you go there, it's how to get the best out of it as well.
Completely, yeah. We have sort of an interactive map.
They're acting like a PR here, aren't they, really?
Yeah, thank you very much.
Spread the word.
Nobody read my book.
Yeah, I'm doing it now.
Of course, we have to mention the show comes to town as well, because it's Ed Wellman's favourite activity. He loves the show comes to town. Well, he loves all the friends of that, and that's where literally the Lincolnshire show comes to the city of Lincoln.
That's right. So that was a new initiative that we did last year with the help of Lincoln Big. So we took basically elements of the Lincolnshire show into the city centre for the first time in decades.
Yeah. It was a success, obviously. It must have been.
Yeah,
yes,
fantastic.
It was. So it was in the city centre. It was about a month before the show. So it was great to sort of go and speak to people about how the show's evolved, because I think there's a lot of... not like a misunderstanding, really, of what an agricultural show is and who it appeals to. So it was nice to just go out, and we spoke to what felt like thousands of people, and we just had Siren FM, but we had stands as well, and we had farm animals in the city centre, which was fantastic, and a tractor, which was probably the most popular exhibit.
The tractor was the most popular thing.
It had a queue from families around just
quite
to go.
It's scary, though, really, how many people were just so fascinated by a tractor. I think, you know, I come from quite an agricultural background and have lived in Lincolnshire, you know, was brought up here, and so tractors are just a part of everyday life.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, but no, honestly, quite.
It was a queue, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Bless the person that said they would bring a tractor. It was Louth Tractors, wasn't it?
Yeah.
It was busy all day.
He loved it, though, didn't
he? Yeah, he did. And we're hosting it. It was such a success that we're doing it again in Lincoln City Centre this year at the end of May. But also we've been contacted by, I contacted them, but Market Raisin and also Gainsborough as well to take the show comes to town there to reach
wider
audience. So no, we're really excited.
How old is the show? When did it
originate? So it's its 131st year of the show, but there were some breaks for Foot and Mouth and also for the war as well. But yeah, it's
quite... I'm guessing here, but I imagine if it was that old when it originated, a lot of the animals would be driven into Lincoln, I assume.
Yes.
That's the sort of, it's like a big market there, really, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
But I mean, the show, when it first started, it did actually tour around the county. It didn't have one site. But then when the showground was bought, then it's obviously stayed there. But it's nice to go back into the city centre, really.
Yes. In Northumberland is quite a big agricultural county as well, and we had things like that. As old pictures of sheep going through Alnwick and sort of stuff.
Nothing like seeing sheep going through Alnwick. You can actually look at the Midweek Drive Morning Edition Southside Broadcaster website and see all sorts of delights, including Natalie Tuck. So you see, that's Natalie Tuck who you spoke to this morning, who was with us on the sequence there. Lots of the other events that were sort of taking place there. Oh, Jive Pony, will they be there this year?
No, not this year.
Can I make a little suggestion? You may have already thought of it, actually, but on your website, if you can get some old pictures of the old shows.
We have, actually.
You have them already, have you?
No, what we've done is we've created a timeline, the story of the Agricultural Society and how it's developed, and we've been able to put some illustrations and even sort of the first show advert, which is fantastic, isn't it?
Yeah.
The typeface is Sticks for some reason, and the highlights were Roots. but yeah, that's all displayed on the website as well, just to give people a feel of how, where it's come from.
That sounds like a really interesting little bit of social history, really.
I think it's quality in every sense of the word. So I don't know, sadly, if you're catching some of these things, which you may not have had a chance to not sort of look at.
I'm learning all about the show. You know, on show days, we're sort of dealing with things as they happen. And I'm like, that Lincolnshire show, it looks a great event. I really ought to go one day.
Sarah Bullimore in her carver.
Apparently, if you wait enough a long time in Lincoln, you'll come to you.
We're going to have another look at the photographs. We'll have a look at the photographs of Lincolnshire show. Meanwhile, Ian, are you ready for Cameron Tilbury's musical selection, a young lady called Diana Upton Hill, who will actually be joining us on the show. Yes, it's been confirmed, Jessica, in a couple of weeks' time.
Yeah,
on the 11th. We schedule that because you know you're netballing next week. So Diana Upton Hill is going to be joining us live a week on Wednesday. That's the 11th. But of course, Ian might sort of think, I don't like this at all. Because you know, it went down very well last night, of course, with the midweek drive. It's Diana Upton Hill.
Are you directing me to say nice things about
it? No, pressure, Ian. You know, I like to feel it's a democracy here. After fashion. It's Diana Upton Hill. Do love well. Changed your mind, Jessica, since you heard Do Love Well last night, Diana Upton Hill's little number?
No, I think it's still very sweet.
Very bright, very positive, perfect for a cold winter's day, which you don't really get in Nashville, but still. Sally, what did you make of Do Love Well and Diana Upton Hill?
Yeah, it was nice. Mm-hmm. Yeah, mm-hmm. Well,
very
yeah.
Nice.
That's very good. And Amelia?
Yeah, liked it.
So it comes down to Ian Lennox then, basically, from that point of view. Ian?
No, I'm not going to say anything nasty about it. I enjoyed it. And I'm glad that the lady didn't manage to resist the temptation to yodel in it.
I think we'll keep that as a question, actually. You know, when she joins us in a couple of weeks, Diana, did you have a temptation to yodel halfway through this particular thing?
It's one of those songs that you could yodel into in the middle of it, and we'll dispose of it, I think. It's a nice and sensitive song.
Yeah, that's something to add down to our musical sort of list, a yodeling version of Diana Upton. Fantastic.
So, I said that.
Amazing. Sally, any questions you want to put to Ian Lennox, who, as well as being a producer with Tyne Tees Television, an ace writer, journalist, is just generally, I mean, he's like one of the North East's men of the year every year, really.
Is it snowing with you?
It is. I've just looked out the window and it is. I saw a glazed window actually and it's white outside.
Yeah.
And I can look at my garden like this. Oh, yes.
And that's what you call cutting edge journalism on the
sparrows in the front garden.
yeah, exactly. There's nothing wrong with sparrows. Well,
no, they're nice little things, sparrows.
Splendid. Okay, I think Jessica's going to throw those last. Oh no, actually, Amelia, you've been with us.
Oh no, what do I say?
You've been. How many shows have you actually? Lord above.
Have you enjoyed your? Is it like telephonic linked? Am I supposed to say
whatever
that?
You like
with us today?
Listen, we've all had suggestions. Has he been chased by a wild animal? Has he ever tasted sour milk? That was a bit random, but you know, just go with them.
Have you enjoyed your telephonic link with us today?
Nice.
I have indeed.
Good delivery. Yeah, very good.
And will we be hearing from you again?
I hope so.
Wonderful. Oh, great.
It's all sorts of things. Still to come on the show, more news about the exciting, wonderful world of the Lincolnshire Showground. Is it still possible for people to get involved with Great British Breakfast Week? I know we're speaking to Phil Vickery in the next part of the programme.
You can eat it. I can,
are you having breakfast in Newcastle on time there, Ian? I mean, are you a breakfast fan? So
I was preparing it when you rang, because I didn't know if I forgot which day it was.
And what, pray tell, are you actually going to consume this fair morning?
Oh, I had a healthy breakfast because I put on weight recently. So.
So not a full English?
Some fibre things with milk and stuff.
Is that all right?
And raisins. I'll have me egg fried bread later on the day.
All day breakfast.
Cutting edge, cut short. Fantastic. Okay, Ian, we salute you. Take care. Speak to you next week.
Get it. Somehow I'll return again to you. The mist is lifting slowly.
It is. The Wildwood Music Festival is going to happen in Barnea, Lincolnshire, August 21st, 23rd. In the second hour of the programme, we'll be joined by the superlatively, wonderfully talented fine soloist Camilla Redmond-Peacock. Isn't that right, Camilla?
That is right, yes.
Yay!
Good morning.
Fantastic. Camilla, welcome to the show. We'll be speaking more after the news. And we've also got Amelia Chambers and the wonderful Sally Monday from the Lincolnshire Agricultural Society. And, of course, Jessica Ward. Great news, all this on Siren 107.3 FM.
Hi, I'm Rachel from On Broadcast. And you're listening to Alex Levchuk on the Midweek Drive.
Thank you. Okay, weather today, highs of 2 degrees centigrade, lows of 0 degrees centigrade, or zero. It'll be cold and breezy with bright spells and scattered sleet and snow showers. Probably going to be the same in August, I would have thought, actually, but maybe not. It's just British summertime in every sense of the word. Amelia, you were the delightful soul who's responsible for the next newbie on the Midweek Drive morning edition. In fact, I spoke to Kevin Peacock earlier, yesterday, and Camilla obviously joining us today. Mm-hmm. Just share with us a little narrative so we can sort of set the scene in terms of how Wildwood, as we said, a truly tremendous music festival coming to Lincolnshire, how it all fits together.
Oh, well, basically, I met Camilla about
A week ago.
Wow. It's really quick work, yes, Alex.
Exactly.
Well done.
Yeah.
And they'd been to the showground just to talk about, because obviously we're a big events venue, just to basically pick our brains a little bit and just converse about how best to spread the word out about the festival. And I'd mentioned Siren FM. Yeah. So this is what's happened.
Hence
but it sounds fantastic event and sounds a great concept. So I just thought it might be interesting for you. And then if you wanted to go actually to the event with some students, that might be great as well.
Camilla, does that chime with the kind of social, the sort of situation where you're going to say, no, it's lies, all lies?
Oh, no, it's all absolutely true. And yes, I thoroughly enjoyed meeting Amelia at the showground a week ago, and she was so helpful. I mean, our expertise is in events, which we've been doing for over 30 years, and our third partner, Peter Ward, is a DJ with Radio Caroline, the original pirate ship, and we needed help spreading the word, which is why we went off to see Amelia.
There we are. And that's what we're starting to do today with a sort of gradual build-up from that point of view. So share with us, because we have a fabulous soul from the Isle of Man and originally from New Zealand, that'd be Jessica Ward, as well as Sally and Amelia, of course, in the studio. And we're all very keen because, I mean, Sally was saying, I don't see any take that.
I'm of an age, Camilla, sorry.
That's fine. And we have had that asked. We will be announcing some headliners, but what we're all about is actually we have cherry-picked the absolute best that we can find in rock and roll, blues, rockabilly. So it is, I guess it's harking back to the sort of glory days of festivals, where you probably went along because you'd heard of one band, but got a whole weekend of the type of music that you absolutely love, but you just hadn't heard before. So that's what we're about. I mean, it's to give the overriding vibe of quality musicianship and the ambiance that went with those music festivals of yesteryear, if you like. And we've imported some amazing bands from the US for rare UK appearances here, and we've got some great new UK talent alongside a couple of established veteran rockers. But on top of that, we will be adding some names that you probably know.
Listen, already, I mean, I'm just taking my big boy bloater in the limits. I don't know why. But anyway, we do actually have in the system bouncing out the perfect radio track, and it's going to be performed actually by somebody who is on the list of the festival. You know,
fabulous.
First name Charlie, second name.
Sure.
Exactly. Will you stay with us as we actually introduce, possibly the first time, because it was a wee while ago. Some of us who are chronologically gifted can remember this becoming like the anthem for breakfast shows the world over. Are you ready for this, Amelia?
Yes, I'm ready.
Pilot of the airwaves, here is my request. You don't have to play it, but I hope you'll do your best. I've been listening to your show on the radio, and you seem like a friend to me.
See now, Barney Lincolnshire, the mobile phones are being swaying in the background there, the pilot of the airwaves is drifting out across the whole thing, and then she might say, no, don't sing that anymore, sorry. Never mind. It'd be a disgrace if it wasn't actually performed from that point of view. So one of the artists that are actually around in terms of the Wildwood Music Festival. And we've also said Happy Australia Day, Wild Things. Mm. 3 days ago, the whole thing. So, yeah.
We have lots of friends in Australia.
It's worrying when you've got a New Zealander in the studio, just as a minor point there, Camilla. But
all
one big family.
New friends.
Exactly. Jessica, questions for yourself about the Wildwood Music Festival. We're looking at the website now. Of course, you can go to wildwood.co.uk and see all the magical things that's actually there.
Yes. How many years has this been running, or is this a new thing?
This is our first year.
Oh.
Yes, which is why we need everybody in Lincolnshire behind us to get this off the ground. We're actually on a site, well, very close to a site, where they had a couple of festivals back in the 70s. So it's not unknown to have a festival in this part of the country, but it's been quite some time since it's been done.
And how are you getting the word out then?
Well, we are doing it via social media. We've been talking to a number of radio stations too. And we will start a sort of big PR drive advertising in magazines, I think in about a month's time. So it is quite tricky getting the word out without spending vast amounts of money. And as a first-time festival, of course, we don't have those resources at our disposal, so we have to rely on everybody to talk about us.
It'll happen. And, you know, I'm just thinking maybe we should actually put Camilla in touch with Cameron Tilbury, because Cameron has several acts over here, and I'm sure with Maple Star
really
Music and Media in Nashville, because presumably this can be seen as an international festival as opposed to simply just based for the people of Lincoln. I mean, if you come in and you don't have a Lincolnshire passport, you won't be barred, will you, Camilla?
Absolutely. We've got people coming. Well, as I said, we've got acts coming over from the US, and I know there are people coming to see them here.
Mm.
I mean, one of our acts, for example, 6875, they're coming from Georgia, Atlanta. Now, this is the first time they've ever played in the UK, but they have quite a huge following over here. And I must confess, I hadn't heard about them before, Suzanne Sledge and her band, but they are fantastic, and I know a number of people are very excited about seeing them in the UK.
It's looking good, and I think we might be able to sort of we might, Jessica, be able to see some of the live sort of midweek drive performers that have been there. Fantastic.
I have another question. What exactly is glamping?
Right, glamping is for people like me who don't want to put up their own tent.
And Sally as well, I think. And
definitely me.
So it can start at the very basic level of having somebody just put up a tent for you, and it can go all the way up to staying in a yurt with a full-poster bed in it, if you so desire. So there are sort of levels of luxury you can add.
So glamorous camping.
Mm. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Well, I can sort of see Emma Tintz and Katie Grimson, and of course you saw Jessica sort of booking those sort of systems out for that. Fantastic, because Katie has said, although she's a key music soul in Birmingham, you know, she hasn't really quite got this sort of notion of the festival, sort of the muddiness, you know, the muddy welliness, etc. Amelia, of course, on the other hand, will go through anything, really.
Oh, yeah.
Well, we don't do a lot of mud in Lincolnshire. It's always glorious in the summer.
Oh, yes.
Ah,
yeah.
Here we are. And onwards. So, Sally, you're about to leave us.
I'm afraid.
A few seconds. And Camilla, you're about to leave us as well, but not before you obviously share once again, how can people get in touch with Wildwood Festival and so on?
Right, you can get in touch with us either on Facebook at Wildwood Festival, www.wildwoodfestival.co.uk, that's our website, and we're on Twitter at wildwood_UK.
We will be featuring you again on a fairly regular basis. I think that's fair to say. Is that right, Amelia? I mean,
yes.
That's what you've, you wrote down for me to actually say.
Yeah, fine.
Fabulous.
Okay.
We're feeling the love.
Sharing the love.
Exactly. That's fantastic. Camilla, take care of yourself. Have a great time. And I'm sure we'll continue the excitement as well. Wildwood Music Festival taking place at Bardney, not the Lincolnshire Showgrounds. Somebody said, oh, when I mentioned that to her, yeah, it's Lincolnshire Show. Just one thing she'd like to say. It's not actually at the Lincolnshire Show. So, fair enough. You're right. It's okay. Fantastic. It will be there. It'll be the event of August. Well, you need something after the Olympics and the
Lincolnshire Show.
That's it.
Clearly. Exactly. It'll be happening.
Beautiful people, you live in the same world as I do, but somehow I never noticed you before today. I'm ashamed to say, beautiful people, we share the same back door and include him in everything we do. He may be sitting right next to you. He may be a beautiful people too. And if you take care of him, well, then maybe he'll take care of you. 'Cause all of the beautiful people do. And all the beautiful people too.
If you're going to talk about breakfasts and you're seeking expert advice with respect to the importance of breakfasts, the best person to go to has to be this morning's resident chef, Michelin star winner, and indeed general all-round superlative chef extraordinaire. That would be the legendary Phil Vickery. Good morning, Phil. How are you?
What a lovely intro. Thank you.
Only truth. That's the important thing. Phil, this survey that's come out about the big breakfast, nothing to do with the old Channel 4 radio show, which I'm sure you're too young to remember. But that's
way too young.
Yeah, way too young to remember that particular thing. But it would seem that the full English, or technically I suppose it's the full British if we're talking about British breakfasts and so on, is something we're quite good at, but many of us actually ignore because we think, oh, it's all right, we won't have breakfast, we'll snack later in the day, and that's the worst thing we could do.
I think it is, you know, I really do, and my grandmother, late grandmother, used to say to me, breakfast is the best meal of the day, and I used to say, yeah, grandma, like you do. But she used to have porridge and honey, and she lived well into her 90s, and the older I get, the more I realise the importance of breakfast, and even with my kids, I drum it into them that, you know, you've got to have something to eat before you go to school, and I think it makes a huge difference with your concentration later on in the morning, stops you snacking on stuff you shouldn't be eating, really. And it just is a generally better thing to do with your life. And I'm just trying to encourage people to do that.
And there was, of course, the classic success as we are right in the middle of Big Breakfast Week from that point of view. The old phrase that said, if you breakfast like a king and supper like a pauper, then things will actually work out.
Whereas, yeah, and lunch like a prince. Yeah,
exactly. So it's always the middle one that forget, and I sort of lose out for that point of view.
I think Somerset Maugham once said, to eat well in England or UK, you need to eat breakfast three times a day. And I thought that was actually quite a good saying. I think I sort of think about that often.
In terms of the actual content of the breakfast, are we best off going to cereals? Should we go to croissants? Should we actually go for the full fry-up? What's the official line on this one?
There's no real line with me. My view is that we need to be careful of the volume you eat, obviously. Mm-hmm. I think as humans, we all eat too much to start with. But I think it's a question of balance. And, you know, a British or English breakfast or a Scottish breakfast or an Irish breakfast, whatever you want to call it, it does have its nutritional value and its place, and it's one of the most delicious things to eat. However, you need to balance that with a bit of moderation, because it is quite a high fat content. But things like porridge, things like cereal, a bit of toast, some fresh fruit, anything. If I'm trying to encourage anybody to eat just a small amount of something in the morning, and I think it certainly helps. And by all means, have your fry-up once or twice a week, or your poached eggs on toast, or scrambled egg, whatever, and it's lovely. But moderation is the key, I think.
Well, I've noticed you steered away there from the northern delicacy, the black pudding.
Oh, no, I love black pudding. I absolutely love it, but a lot of people don't like it. That's
why
I mention it.
I think it's something to do with congealed blood. They're just like, no, I'm not going to go there. Well, exactly. It's just not appropriate. Again, in terms of the overall sort of construction of this side of things, do you think that Big Breakfast Week is now into its 16th year,
yeah.
So it's grown up with the 21st century, really, as an event and so on. Are people actually changing their habits, do you think? Or is there a tendency, particularly for commuters, where they sort of think, oh, well, we'll snack en route, we'll actually take a snack bar, which, again, is not a good thing to do?
No, and also time and pressure constraints on everybody, you know, with family life or work life. We're all working harder, we're working longer hours. And I'm not saying it's easy. Of course it's not. It can be very difficult. I think just addressing that problem to start with can help, and spending extra 10 minutes, for instance, you can make porridge. You can make a batch of porridge on a Monday in a microwave, and it'll be fine in the fridge for a week, warming up and bits, you know, as you go along. It can be done. Sausages can be cooked and reheated as well. It's not a problem. It's just making the time and being aware of that. And that extra 10 minutes in the morning, you know, even 5 minutes, a banana, a glass of milk, a piece of toast, it can be done. And I'm not preaching for any sense of, you know, of high morals. I'm just saying that I think it's a really good idea that we perhaps even look at it and perhaps address it a little bit more.
Can companies and organisations and institutions possibly help by providing breakfast for their employees?
I think they can. I think a lot do, and I think a lot do a very, very good job. I mean, you know, the coffee shop, for instance, all the high street coffee shops now sell muesli bars, they sell porridge. You know, it can be done, and I think it may be slightly expensive, but it can be done, and I think it's a question of balance at the end of the day.
And again, an interesting statistic that came out of this survey for Breakfast Week was that those who miss breakfast three times a week are twice as likely to reach for a bag of crisps and biscuits rather than those who breakfast every day.
This is the problem, and I think it's the mid to late morning munchies that get you, and then you're busy, you're stressed, and what you need to do is just get on and just you'll pick up anything. And my brother's a doctor, and he did do some research a long time ago. We said that things like porridge, for instance, which has a low energy release, can actually sustain you up to lunchtime. It doesn't say, he said, you know, you'll still get hungry, but it just pushes that hunger just a little bit further away. And that is the problem. Then you start picking up all sorts of bits and pieces. So, you know, it sometimes also I find I don't want to eat in the morning, but I do force myself because 2 hours later I will feel hungry.
Phil, you've not only provided ace cookery tips, but also ace nutritional advice, really. So it's a double winner. Plus, of course, it proves that proof of the pudding is true, because even black pudding is actually in there, proof of the pudding, as far as the other sort of series is concerned. So it's nice to cross over. Have you had a reasonably interesting and nutritious telephonic link with us on the Midweek Drive?
I have, and thank you very much. And can I just say, if you want more information or recipes or to find out who the winners are of Breakfast Week, if you go to shakeyourwakeup.com, all the information is there that you need.
Well, next up, of course, we have our wonderful guru from Waitrose. That would be William Sitwell. And I'm sure if he hasn't already done so, he will probably be saying, Phil Vickery, it's the place to actually go to. So thumbs up from that point of view. Phil, it's been fabulous. Hopefully we'll speak again soon.
Thanks a lot. Cheers, Alex.
You'll say we've got nothing in common, no common ground to start from, and we're falling apart.
you'll say. The world has come between us. Our lives have come between us. Still I know you just don't care. And I said, what about breakfast to Bill?
Always impressive that no matter who or which famous chef we actually feature on the programme, Phil Vickery, of course, Michelin star Ward Phil Vickery, there's always a kind of sharp intake of breath and admiration, secret sort of, well, wow, when we mention William Sitwell. And I think you got that from Phil Vickery. It's a slight sort of thing, you know, he's talking about the big breakfast and suddenly I say, well, coming up next, William Sitwell. He's, wow, you know, it's, you know, finally. Phil Vickery is William Sitwell's warm-up act, and rightly so as well. Isn't that right, William? Good morning. Well, how are we?
Yeah, very well. It's like, well, I mean, I'm overwhelmed. Who is Phil Vickery?
Please, I best not play that back on the podcast. This morning's resident chef. That's, of course, the TV show.
I know. Tremendous guy. Tremendous man.
Exactly.
Hugely talented. Utterly charming.
Yeah, and likes his breakfasts, and quite right.
And knows how to cook.
Yeah, well, precisely. And I know that you've...
But the other... Not to be confused with Phil Vickery, the rugby player.
Oh, and he did rugby player, exactly. Yeah.
And I was asked to interview Phil Vickery on stage at the big food expo event, which mm-hmm. is the sort of big food exhibition in Birmingham last, I think it was summer before last. Mm-hmm. And they said, we'd like to come and interview Phil Vickery. So I said, that's fine, great, you know, big fan of him. And so I did a bit of research, learned all about Phil and, you know, his brilliant cooking career and where he'd come from and the awards he'd won and so on. And then, he was late arriving. So I introduced him to the audience and said, please welcome on stage Phil Vickery. And on came Phil Vickery, the rugby player.
Yeah. Understandable, you know, and that's what tests your technique, of course.
Exactly.
Going back to technique and saying, well, you know, you must do some cooking in the kind of rugby world. And I won't go there. It's wonderful.
Yeah. It was interesting. But you know, you'd have coped with that.
That's what we do, effectively. It's still more. William, it's a case of learning to love the super rich. Why should we, as you said in the Times today?
Well, you know, when they ring you up and they say, will you write a piece and we'll pay you X, you say yes.
Yeah, exactly.
Then you ask what the piece is. No, but it's interesting because the piece in the Times that I've written, basically, I mean, it's a fun piece, but a lot of people spend their lives sort of attacking. We're talking about the uber rich. We're talking about the 0.1 percenters. We're talking about the people who...
Let's have a couple of Sunseeker yachts, not just one.
Yeah, exactly. So I've written 15 reasons why we should love them, and talking about the fact that, you know, all of the employment that results from people digging out basements, for example, in swathes across London, giving construction companies, you know, a good life, conveyancing firms who can rub their hands with glee because of all the party wall litigation between the, you know, the billionaire neighbours and the people who don't want to have the noise of diggers. All the chefs who can charge a fortune to get the super rich into their restaurants and you know, people who aspire to become butlers to the super rich, who themselves can become super rich because they can earn about £100,000, you know, it goes on and on and on. So, you know, there is a bit of a trickle down, but I suppose we should also write about why we should all love the poor as well, so for some balance.
Mm. Well, it's important in every sense of the word. Jessica, what makes you, what do you make of this little routine, having just spent a few moments saying how when you were in New Zealand you helped set up a breakfast club for the poor lost souls of New Zealand children?
Yeah, I think this is great. I definitely think breakfast is really important.
Mm-hmm. If you're rich, you actually need to have breakfast.
Exactly. Have breakfast.
But what about William's views about the super rich?
I think that's interesting. I think it's good that you are being optimistic and looking at the positive side, because people tend to just, you know, I hate the rich and
that
is it.
You can't say that. That's not good.
I know. You have to at least be open-minded.
They might give you a little sort of, you know, reward.
Yeah, exactly.
Checks payable to Siren 107.3 FM, Midweek Drive, Morning Edition. Sorry, just...
Like you said, they employ people and they do have help. Not all of them are horrible.
Exactly. And you can have horrible poor people as well.
Exactly, exactly. Yeah, so both ends.
Very good. I feel as though we've almost gone from cooking and culinary delights, William, to, you know, a sociological study from the Western world. Very good.
Exactly. I've had a rather foul breakfast, actually.
Oh, no.
What was it?
It was a sort of fat-free granola from a well-known brand, and I'm regretting it. I think you need the fat in it. Oh. Mind you, I ate so much last night. I had a... I don't know if we talked a few weeks ago about the piece that I wrote for the Mail about my crazy prep school, but we had a school reunion last night.
Did you have spanking session? Sorry, I shouldn't have said that.
Oh, Alex!
No, we talked about... You know, I remember when the head boy used to parade his crimson slippers past us miscreants before we got ushered into the head study and walloped. Mm. I was caned for being lazy.
I can't believe that.
Flashbacks.
Can you believe that?
It's all coming out now.
Of course, technically, you could actually... I mean, there are several legal advisors who would probably actually be at your beck and call, William, to actually sort of go into the notion of redress that particular situation. So.
Do you know what? I think they were absolutely right to wallop me.
Hmm.
Yeah, and they should have done it harder.
Steady, William. It's only 9:33 in the morning. You know, just sort of hold fire a little bit, and it's not Soho Radio. Much as though it's a fun sort of place in every sense of the word.
Yeah, I might send you. We'll send you a clip. I'll send you some highlights, and you can play it to your listener.
Always good. Yes, we like to feel that's very important. I mean, in fact, our listener identified, as we noted earlier, John Wenham, that there was indeed an earthquake in Lincoln last night.
Was there?
Yeah, there was. You see, these are the kind of things which it was Natalie Tucker who originally sort of identified that this had happened, but the official line was, for the completists, that the earthquake registered 3.2 on the Richter scale. It was centred around Oakham, and it occurred at approximately 10:25 p.m. last night and was felt in various parts around Lincoln.
Wow, I didn't realise you were on a fault line.
The cathedral actually did collapse because
did.
Of an earthquake did, yeah. 1,000-odd years ago. So, you know, who knows what could actually happen on that sort of particular basis.
Yeah, I see that hashtag Oakham earthquake is trending at the moment.
Well, you see.
You see the seismogram.
Yeah.
Gosh.
Yeah, you can see that it's not only the case of William Sitwell on the show that enables us to actually boost the sort of the range of listenership which is in that whole thing. You know, William Sitwell, he makes the earth move.
I like the word seismicity. It's a good one, isn't it?
Yeah. So, William, sadly, our two fine folk from the Lincolnshire Agricultural Society, Sally and Amelia, have headed off to actually do marvellous things for the Lincolnshire Agricultural Society, which is what they always do. But the invitation is still there, as they assured me, that it would welcome you with open arms to the Lincolnshire show, which, of course, takes place in June this year. And I think it's the 24, you know, we haven't written that. Have you written the dates down? No, exactly. I know. Well, anyway, the Lincolnshire show is in June.
Okay.
Yes. So, and you've got the brochure there. So the dates of the Lincolnshire show are what, Jessica?
Notice
the spontaneous rehearsal with which we actually sort of just sprung this on you, William. It's very good. The dates of the Lincolnshire show.
These ones say March.
It can't be March, though.
I know.
No, that's a different line entirely. We'll find. Anyway, you're always welcome in Lincoln, William. That's the bottom line. You know, for Lincolnshire.
Well, you're very kind. You're very kind, and I feel welcome when I come there. Always get a good audience.
Well, yeah, small but perfectly formed. That's the important sort of side of things, etc. It's brilliant stuff. I'm sure. Actually, we will. Because Amelia would never be able to sort of speak to me again with any sort of scenario if we didn't give the dates of the Lincolnshire Showground. So, Jessica, ask William what you will whilst I sort this little thing out from Mr. Computer.
How is the weather in London?
It's an incisive question.
Crisp and bright.
So, no snow whatsoever?
No.
Oh, we've had a few flurries of show and a variety of other bits and pieces within that.
Yeah, well, I'm going to Boston in 2 weeks, and the weather was 15 feet of snow yesterday, so I hope it clears up by the time I visit.
What are you going to be doing
in
Boston?
I can't possibly tell you.
Oh.
I'm on a foodie mission.
Ooh. 18th and 19th of June, 2014. Lincolnshire Showground. Of course, the website lincolnshireshow.co.uk gets a complete revamp. It's being completely revitalised next week.
Yes.
And that's going to be very, very exciting indeed, but it's the 18th and 19th 19th of June 2014. So there we are. Sometimes. Actually, it's only for... Do you have the dates of the Northamptonshire show, William? Because, you know, whilst we're sort of promoting things to do this year.
Well, the key date, of course, is always the 1st September. Mm-hmm. The first Sunday... first Saturday in September, whatever that is. And so that'll be the Weston and Whedon Horticultural Society's annual show, where we'll have a food fair and all sorts of treats. We had Anthony Worrell Thompson opening it last year. I'm yet to bag a celebrity, but I know we'll try and do that, and we try and grow that show year after year. I think it's the 78th year this year, and it was founded by C.H. Middleton, who was the famous gardener who used to broadcast the Dig for Victory campaign, and he actually recorded some broadcasts in a small attic at my family home. But he lived in a village, C.H. Middleton, and so the Dig for Victory campaign was sort of very much part of our village, and of course is one of the most famous campaigns across the world, across Britain during the Second World War.
And of course,
so we celebrate his existence each year as well. So that's pretty amazing.
And it worked. We won. We were victorious, despite the loans that we took from America to actually help on the way. But oh, that's a different line. William, it's been a delight as ever. Coming up, we'll be speaking to the head of sociology at the University of Cambridge. That will be Dr. Brendan Burchell, who has actually made a study of what actually tests our patience. Apparently, 8 minutes is pretty much the maximum. Most people are quite happy to actually waste on sort of core waiting and various other factors, etc. Although that can actually sort of improve if we only provide folk with information. So we don't mind waiting as long as there's information in terms of why you're waiting. In a restaurant, apparently the maximum, William, for actually waiting before people get a little bit irritated, before the food is actually brought to the table. Would you like to hazard a guess, William? Any thoughts? How much before you sort of think, it's enough's enough?
12 minutes.
24. Very close.
Really? Yeah, 24. That's quite a long time to wait for a starter, 24 minutes.
That's the research.
Does that include bringing bread to the table and butter and olive oils and stuff like that?
From the inception, the research carried out by Interparcel, 24 minutes for foods to be brought to the table is about the limit. That's about it. Yeah.
I suppose if we've got
so that's
drinks.
The point at which they lose their temper.
Exactly.
24
minutes. That's pretty much it. Yeah. Mm. So it's point to point. You can actually have a stopwatch, your next sort of thing. It just says, I'm sorry, it's 24 minutes, 2 seconds. It's gone completely. But, yeah.
Actually, when I was in Poland, we waited for 40 minutes. And
you see? You
so we decided just
enough.
I think the more pressing point is how long people are prepared to wait before they get a drink.
Yeah.
Because if you've got it, often actually, I think restaurants make you wait longer so that they can sell you more alcohol. Mm. And often restaurants make more money on their alcohol than they do on their food. So I think that's probably another one of the restaurateur's secret ways of extracting money from the diners.
See, yeah, once again, despite the fact that another week has gone by without us unveiling the William Sitwell jingle, he's still straight in there. But Phil Leonis in the United States, that would be Los Angeles, has said that he's working on it. He felt very guilty last night that we hadn't sort of got it sorted out yet. But yeah, it'll happen. If not, I've got alternatives in mind. Last two questions for William Sitwell, please. Jessica.
Have you enjoyed the midweek drive today?
I have. I like the fact it's been a rambling, meandering conversation. I think it does radio proud.
Aww. And will we be hearing from you in the near future?
I would put your money on it. Next week, but not the week after.
There you have. Okay. Because, of course, Boston.
Yes, of course. Shh. It's all quiet.
Matter how long.
patience is a virtue, and that's something which perhaps needs to be adhered to, but maybe only for 8 minutes to address this, and also how the perception of patience and us being an easygoing and tolerant nation might be changing in all sorts of ways due to new research. We're delighted to welcome the head of sociology at the University of Cambridge. That would be the fantastic Dr. Brendan Birchall. Dr. Birchall, welcome to the programme. How are you keeping?
Very well, Alex. Thanks. Good to talk to you again.
Thanks. It was nice to see we haven't actually had call waiting from this point of view, because who knows what could happen, because that's one of my own particular pet hates, when you actually have call waiting and then Muzak pumps its way through the system. But talk to us about this fascinating survey that suggests that the average person loses their patience after 5 minutes waiting to be served at the bar, 13 minutes for a delayed train, and 18 minutes waiting for a friend to call us back.
It is a fascinating survey. Interparcel have asked us about all these different aspects of our lives, and they've got 2,000 people who've contributed to it. And as you see, all these different aspects, it makes you wonder, realise how much you spend your time waiting, and how sometimes you will lose your cool after just a few seconds. Other times people are fantastically patient.
I mean, often we might sort of regard it as being a kind of the patience of Job, or indeed a saint-like patience, or indeed just a Buddhist philosophy in terms of patience, just letting things happen. But are we somehow hardwired to actually get a little bit irritated if things aren't actually working? And I cited call waiting as an example. I don't think that was actually in the survey in terms of how much you actually say, enough already.
There is. One of the things that, interestingly, that older people get even more aggravated, the younger people, and it's usually the other way around, is when out call waiting, particularly for a big company, a utility company. I don't think it's hardwired. And the reason I say that is because when we drill down into this data, there's huge variability. Some people start to get very impatient even after 2 minutes of call waiting. Other people, 40 minutes, 50 minutes, not a problem for them.
I mean, oftentimes we're faced in the academic world with students who are just impatient for their results, or they don't want their results, or they wait for various other things, and we've always got this immediate turnaround to work through. Is it something to do with the kind of pressure of modern times, this notion that sometimes, you know, we're kind of inbuilt to expect instant gratification, and if that doesn't come through, we might get frustrated and then quite annoyed?
That's a big theme that people will tend to resonate to, that there's something about, particularly the internet age, that we so often can get feedback, like with a parcel. We know exactly where it is. We can track it online, which we didn't used to have. We used to have to wait for weeks and weeks for parcels to arrive in the past. So, yeah, it could well be. And, of course, sometimes, as you say, lots of religions treat the patience as a very important virtue. Sometimes it is. Sometimes you really should start to become impatient and assert yourself.
Yeah, I mean, I'm interested in terms of the age-old gender relationship aspect here, insofar as there is a strategy, of course, which sometimes I might have even employed myself, whereby you actually set a kind of deadline or a time slot a little bit earlier than it needs to be, because you know that your partner or your wife or your girlfriend will actually take a bit longer to get sorted through. So you have to strategically build in a certain amount of time so you don't have that frustration of, well, we're going to be late, or it's 27 minutes late, and we've gone in that sense of the word.
That's right. And clearly families are one of the things that people highlight as testing our patients, families and partners, even more so for women than men. But it's nice to see that men in that situation, it's certainly not always the case, but in that situation, men do seem to be more patient than women. Men will wait for their girlfriends longer than girlfriends wait for their boyfriends.
That's extraordinary. I mean, as you mentioned, Interparcel carried out this research, and of course, dining experiences. So we hear a great deal about the problems and the difficulties of fast food these days. And I must admit, that is probably interesting. If you do avail yourself of a restaurant which is supposed to be fast food, and you're kept waiting and waiting and waiting, that's got to be a slight irritant, because you're not even enjoying the dining experience from that point of view.
But then I suppose in that situation, it depends who you're with. And this is one of the mysteries of time, the way it can pass so quickly under some circumstances, and other times it can be excruciating. And restaurants have got very canny. Often they, again, will tell us that we're going to wait longer than we actually are. So it's a pleasant surprise when the food arrives. There's a lot of psychology in it.
And is that also a classic case of managing expectations, but also managing those expectations from the perception, perhaps, of the pineal gland?
Absolutely. And again, I think that's what Interparcel have found, that it's people's expectations and being kept informed. If you know when, say, the food is going to come or when the parcel is going to arrive, you don't mind waiting so much. But if you kept in the dark, that does really make people frustrated, and it brings on that feeling of irritation, which is all too familiar often when we're waiting.
Does this also apply to areas such as queuing? I mean, for many years it was part of the British culture, really, that we liked to queue. It was part of our kind of innate satisfaction, the right to queue. Is that something else where we're seeing more and more impatient? I mean, I'm thinking particularly if you're queuing for train barriers and train tickets and so on, that can get a little bit frustrating, again, if there's no information forthcoming.
It can, although whether these things are changing, I think, again, in that situation, it's the fairness of it. If you can see everyone else is queuing patiently and fairly, that's fine. If there are people trying to push in front of you, that's when people's blood starts to boil.
And they always say that time flies when you're having fun. Is that also part of the perception that, in essence, the way in which we kind of see the passage of time, etc., sometimes 2 minutes can seem like an eternity, particularly when you're maybe aged 4 or 5, and to other people it's a case of, well, a week can pass by and it's whoosh, gone.
Yes, and certainly maybe part of growing up is learning to be more patient about things, and children and animals often aren't that patient at all. There are some ways in which older people get less patient as well. They're less patient in a restaurant, which surprised me a bit. Less patient when they're waiting for their doctor.
Maybe they think there's less time on the earth to actually exist, so they actually sort of want to pack in as much as they can. No, I probably have to revamp that whole sort of notion. Finally, Brendan, from the perspective of, I mean, I mentioned the pineal gland, is this a case of we can see psychologically and sociologically as well how that perception value sort of operates? And apart from the information thing which you've mentioned, are there any other exercises that people might be able to do to enhance their patient qualities?
Lots of religions talk about this, and they see part of the training of a virtue is to become a more patient individual. I haven't seen any good evidence to see how that works. But just one final thought. There are regional differences too, and in the east of England, I don't know if this resonates with you, but people seem to be more patient with their friends, which I think is a good thing.
Exactly. I mean, so if we end on that as we begin to approach 8 minutes we've had this interview for, it's amazing. And it seems as though it's just gone in a few seconds, a few microseconds. But two final questions for your good self, Dr. Brendan Birchall. First of all, have you had a reasonably interesting and, not too generally boring telephonic link with us today? Has it been okay for you?
Yeah, I've enjoyed it, yes.
That's okay. Well, I certainly have. So can we look forward to featuring again in the not-too-distant future, assuming we can have the patience to wait for you to return?
I hope so, yeah. Let's hope it's not too long.
Precisely. Dr. Brendan Birchall, Head of Sociology at the University of Cambridge. Many thanks indeed.
I know this may come as somewhat of a shock, but of your innumerable and extraordinary gifts, one day you'll consider your present-day challenges as the greatest of them all. Trust me. Now, wasn't I good to you, the universe?
Excellent. Thanks to Amelia Chambers, Sally Munday and Jessica Ward for joining us in the studio. Natalie Tuck, Richard Fitzwilliams, Ian Lennox, Dr. Brendan Birchall, Phil Vickery, Camilla Redmayne, Peacock, William Sitwell and your good self, dear listener, for being with us during the course of the programme. That's it. Out for the Midweek Drive Morning Edition. Coming up next on Siren, of course, Media Madness. That's Media Madness between 10 and 11. Fantastic stuff there. Eddie Pinion is on later at 1. That's it. Happy trails. See you again for the Midweek Drive on Wednesday, hopefully between 5 and 7. Here's Sinatra.